My name is Emma. I'm a mom, I'm a stepmom, I'm a wife, and I love being creative. That's one of my passions. And I try and do it in any way I can. My life before Jesus being central was a really, really dark time. It was full of a lot of pain, a lot of numbing that pain. Relationships revolved around not much other than substances. It was a very dark, hopeless time for me. I actually was born into a Christian home, raised in a really strong Christian family, and then I lost my way, I would say early teen years, until the time actually I turned 20 and found out I was pregnant, pretty much right after turning 20. So very young, very scary. I didn't have a lot of strong relationships to support me at the time, other than my parents. And I didn't really have a lot of ways to deal with stress that would have been suitable when I was pregnant. So I kind of had nowhere to turn, and I was really, really full of fear. And my dad actually reminded me that God chose you to be this baby's mother, and Jesus loves this baby, and like, that was it. That kind of gave me hope, and it kind of reminded me of what I had forgotten so many years ago. I really had nowhere to turn. Everything that I was using to numb stress, to numb pain, everything was gone because I was now carrying this little baby. I really needed comfort, I needed peace. I had no idea what was happening. Pregnancy is one of those times where you literally have no control over what's going on in your body. So that's when I started praying again. And that's when I really found comfort in Jesus. I love that I can talk to Jesus about anything. One of my favorite times to talk to Jesus is driving in my car. I find that it's a time where I can just talk to him like he's sitting right beside me. I love that I can ask for peace when I'm feeling overwhelmed and stressed. I love that I can ask for comfort. I love that I can ask for help. Like, please just help me with my patience today. Help me be a good mom. Help me speak life into my stepson when all I want to do is rip my hair out. There's so many things that I talk to God about, and Jesus is just a friend who sits beside me and gives me comfort and holds his hand over me. My daughter and I talk to God every single day, together and alone. We encourage our family. Like, my husband has recently come to the Lord as well, and so our relationship has totally pivoted in a way where we have conversations about what Jesus has put on our heart. And that's something where I look back to when I first found out I was pregnant, I could have never dreamed that this would be where we are at. And this is such a central part of our lives. I mean, our favorite part of the week is coming to church. And I mean, I find so much life in being able to teach my children and walk with them in their journey of faith. And I kind of get to look through it. Their eyes and everything that we learn and everything we talk about. I think it's so interesting because once you're teaching something, that's when you know if you know your stuff. You don't really fully grasp it until you're teaching it to someone else, which has been really cool. Like, talking about God to, my now 4-year-old, it's a different type of understanding when you're talking in 4-year-old terms. It's really testing your faith of what you know and what you believe and standing strong in that. I look back at my life and I look at my journey, and there is a lot of shame in where I've been. And I would say that you're never too far gone. You really aren't. He's always gonna chase after you. Christmas in Jesus means joy. Christmas is the most joyful time. They're not only for all the wonderful activities, obviously there's so many fun Christmas activities, but there's a real sense of joy and celebration when I think of Jesus and Christmas.
Hi folks, good to be with you, and really great to hear Emma's story of light in the darkness. You know, we're going to be hearing stories from people every week leading up to Christmas, and invite you to listen closely to those stories that bring hope and share truth. We are in a new series starting now and moving all the way up until Christmas, a series rooted in the first chapter of John. Allow me to read our text for today. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So Advent is here, and Christmas is coming. And for our two small children, these days are filled with sparkling ornaments and messy baking and silly songs and uncontrollable bursts of excitement. It's probably healthy also for us as adults to let our inner child out too. As Charles Dickens wrote, it's good to be children sometimes, and never better than at Christmas when its mighty founder was a child himself. Of course, in our home, we really do try to ensure that the main character of the season stays in focus when there's competition from others. So the other day, I was pleasantly surprised when I asked our three-year-old, "Who is Jesus?" And she responded with, "God." I followed up with another question, "And who is God?" To which she replied, "Jesus." And I admit that I didn't expect such theological clarity and depth from a three-year-old. She must be reading John's gospel by flashlight when we put her to bed. An old saying goes that John's gospel is so deep that you can't find the bottom, and yet so accessible a child can paddle around quite easily. Such is the nature of great poetry. And an argument could be made that John's prologue, those first 18 verses, is the most influential work of literature in human history. So brilliant and clear, John's is the gospel that we nudge new Christians to read first. So dizzying and dense, it's driven scholars nuts. Tom Wright, who's a biblical scholar and a historian, tells a story about applying for a post at a university and being asked by those doing the interview what he thought about the Gospel of John, as opposed to Matthew, Mark, or Luke, who are the other ancient biographers of Jesus. And Tom replied in that interview, "You know, I feel about John how I feel about my wife. I love her deeply, but I do not pretend to fully understand her." Many of us are at least a little familiar with the Christmas story, which is usually a mishmash of events in the Gospels, pushed together on our mantelpieces in the form of a nativity scene. Mary and Joseph, angels, shepherds, a baby in a manger. That's St. Luke's version of things. St. Matthew gives us Jesus' genealogy and the mysterious magi, or we might know as the wise men. John is different gravy. Probably writing a few decades later, John didn't knock off Luke or Matthew's version. Those were kind of hits that the first Christians already knew and loved. They'd circulated throughout the ancient churches. So John doesn't focus on the shepherds or the magi or even a manger. Ambitiously, John aims at deeper mysteries. His biography of Jesus begins as a wide shot of the whole story. John zooms out and John zooms in. He's cosmic and glorious in scale, and yet as enlightening and as intimate as a candle in your window. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. It's no wonder that the traditional symbol for John's gospel is an eagle. John gives us a wonderfully clear and high vantage point. Still, John's gospel isn't always the top pick in the jolly old season. It's Matthew and Luke who record the particulars of Jesus' birth, so why not stick with the classic Christmas hits? And the answer is in the lights we put up, in the presents that we give, in the food that we eat, the life we celebrate. You can't really yank the symbolism and the imagery out of this bizarre season, because if you did, you'd have nothing left. And a great deal of the imagery that we step into at Advent and at Christmas finds its origin in the Gospel of John. We read John's Gospel at Advent and at Christmas because, in a way, John's is the oldest Christmas story. John begins at the very beginning, not with Mary, not even with Abraham. He takes us past prehistory into pre-time. And the more you read John, the more Christmas, with all of its depth and hope and light, comes home for you. When you finally get your head and your heart a little around John, it's like swimming in the reservoir which has been feeding water to your kitchen faucet all these years. To put it simply, John takes us right to the source. We read John's Gospel at Christmas because Jesus is the heart of Christmas, and Jesus is the heart of John's Gospel in a way that's special and unique. And at Christmas, we believe that it's Jesus who brings light and life to everybody and everything. Humans can't see in the dark, and we have a death problem. We're desperate. We're totally dependent on someone else for light and life. And for John, and for millions over the millennia, that someone is Jesus. Today, as I read earlier, we're looking at John 1, 1 to 5. And we're going to cover more of John's prologue throughout December. But just for today, what does John say about Jesus in these first few words? Well, let's take a deep breath. Well, right away we hear that Jesus was God from the very beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. We can't begin without pointing out John's beginning. What John's doing is he's echoing the Hebrew creation story, what we might call Genesis 1, in the beginning, which takes us not to the middle, not to the end, but to the start. John's telling us that Jesus was there. Not only was Jesus there, that Jesus was with God, but that Jesus was God. So for John, Jesus isn't God's sidekick or any kind of lesser being. And this is crucial in our understanding of Jesus. The Jesus whom John is going to tell us more about in the rest of his gospel is the source of everything. Jesus was there when the cosmos were born, when time began, there for everything that we call beginning. So we're not even out of verse 1, and already our heads are starting to spin. Wasn't Jesus a human being? Isn't Jesus described as God's son? Now, the mysteries of what we call the Trinity or the incarnation hit us head on in John's opening lines. But John's adamant. Whatever else you think about Jesus, however else you want to describe him, John sees Jesus as the Lord of creation, the creator. And the word that John uses for Jesus in his prologue is the Word, which is a term that is so historically and philosophically dense, I'm actually tempted to chicken out and skip over it entirely. But I can't, because he's talking about Jesus. So let's just hear a couple of things. Notice these things. First, back in Genesis 1, the very beginning of the Bible, we're told that God speaks creation into being. Words, as we know, have power. And for many cultures, words not only do things, a word is like a thing or is a thing. So a word can be a blessing, and a word can be a weapon. So when John says Jesus is the Word, he's making a connection between Genesis 1 and who Jesus is in relation to his power, his place, and his agency in the universe. We might even say that for John, Jesus is the body language of God. Second, the Greek word which John uses for Word, which is logos, can also be translated reason. Reason was highly prized in the ancient Greek-speaking world. The philosophers were nuts about it. The thinking was that some kind of higher thought or reason was above or behind everything. At the very beginning of things, even what held everything together. So John's writing at the end of the first century, trying to make connections for people with limited knowledge of Jesus' Jewish roots. He's trying to put Jesus to the Greek-speaking world in a way they might understand without totally dislocating Jesus from Israel's history. And this is part of his genius. John uses the term logos, or the word, and the in the beginning language to get close to the Jewish and the Greek listener to say to them both simultaneously, listen, what you believe makes sense of things. What you believe to be responsible for everything. What you believe to be the thing to be prized above all else, holding everything together. That's actually not an idea, but this person, Jesus. As mentioned earlier, John's ambitious. He was also Jesus' closest disciple, waiting till the very end of his very long life to finally put his words down. But when John does write, boy, does he have some conviction about Jesus' identity. He goes on, through him, meaning Jesus, through him all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light to all mankind. So next, John builds to clarify that not only was Jesus present at the beginning, that Jesus made everything. What does he mean by everything? Well, the heavens, the firmament, as they would have called it back then, what we call the night sky, the space. And of course, the earth, the things that we live amongst, the ocean, the seas, the mountains, things like that. Remember, John's an ancient person writing towards the end of the first century, so he can't Google facts about the universe for fun on a rainy day. But that doesn't make him or other ancient people stupid. They looked around and they looked up, just like we do. Of course, we can look further now and we've had a bit more of a look around. But ancient people wrestled with questions about where they came from and how we got here, just like us. There's a publication on space called Skylight by the BBC. And one writer in it said this, "The universe has not existed forever. It was born. All matter, energy, space, even time erupted into being. Whatever way you look at it, the idea that the universe popped into existence out of nothing, that there was a day without a yesterday, is utterly bonkers. But yet that is what the evidence tells us." So even though we know a good deal about the cosmos and our planet, we still don't know exactly how everything came to be, but we know it began. So we're still somewhat in the dark with the ancients. We've not answered all of the questions yet. We've not really answered many of the big questions at all that are out there in the starry sky. There's another scientist who was quoted in that same publication as saying, "The universe is not stranger than we imagine. It is stranger than we can imagine." So what John is putting to us as we take all this in, is that there is a being, there is a person who set all this in motion and keeps all this in motion. Jesus, creator of all things, life's origin and sustainer. Now you can take or leave some of these space facts, but the scientists at NASA say this, "Our Milky Way galaxy is just one of the billions of galaxies in the universe. Within it, there are at least 100 billion stars. And on average, each star has at least one planet orbiting it. This means that there are potentially thousands of planetary systems like our solar system within just our galaxy." Are we starting to feel small yet? Are we starting to imagine how big Jesus is if you call yourself a Christian. A manger can't exactly contain him. John continues, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. This is a good time to mention that John loves using binary opposition in his gospel because he's reaching so clearly back to Genesis. Life and death, light and darkness being two main examples. Can you guess how he describes Jesus? Well, John says that Jesus is the light with whom darkness can't compete, the life with whom death can't contend. What kind of darkness and death? Well, everything frightening and problematic out there, Jesus can handle. And everything frightening and problematic inside us, Jesus can handle. John is speaking both cosmically and morally. Space isn't scary to Jesus, and neither are the depths of my heart. Jesus is the light who can't be snuffed out, and the life who can't be destroyed. As John says later in his gospel, as do the other gospel writers, even when you think you've snuffed Jesus out or you've totally destroyed him, he will shine. He will live. Jesus is light. Jesus is life, the source of billions of stars and thousands of galaxies. So when we sing, "Yes, Jesus loves me, the Bible tells me so," or "This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine," to put it mildly, we can't possibly comprehend the power of that light, life and love. Okay, so we've just done what I'd say is an extremely light survey of the Gospel of John's opening words, just a flyby. And libraries, let me tell you, are literally full of research on John's incredible biography of Jesus. And I encourage you to dig further into John's gospel through the season and beyond as you pay attention to scripture. There's so much more to learn. But an important note, we don't listen to the gospel first as researchers, but as bang average human beings. Here 1 minute and gone the next in the vast fabric of space and time. We're just people with worries and fears, with unanswered questions, with unanswerable questions. And we're here as a community trying to talk about and trust Jesus, trusting the light in the darkness, trusting that he's the life that death is no match for. So as we begin this kind of crazy and comforting season, please hear this on the first day of Advent. By all means, be warmed by the kindness and the intimacy of a baby in a manger. But as John insists, don't mistake Jesus for anything less than what and who he is. Christmas is more than cuddly. It's deeply personal, and it's indescribably powerful. It's why we shout, "Let heaven and nature sing." This is cosmic and eternal stuff. So we're comforted by the humility in the cradle, yes, but we're also inspired at Christmas to look up at the stars, kind of gobsmacked to hear that the one above and beyond every light we can see and every light we can't see has been held and can be trusted. At Christmas, we take Jesus in our arms, so to speak, which leads us to put our lives in Jesus' more than capable hands. Hands full of oceans and mountains, of planets and stars, of you and me. So here at the beginning of the season, as Dickens encouraged us, let's be children at Christmas. Some of us are professionals. Others of us are homemakers, educators, business owners, students, you name it. First, let's be children. Small, dependent, filled with wonder and need and curiosity and laughter and tears. Christmas signals to us that the time for pretense is over. We can quit the charade of self-sufficiency. if our mind is a mess, if we feel like our own worst enemy, if our future is unsure, if the future is terrifying, the light shines in the darkness. If we're lost beyond words, if we're anxious about tomorrow, the light shines in the darkness. If we're sick, if someone we love is sick, if we're desperate for hope, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can't overcome it. Jesus is more than capable of holding and healing us. We can bring him anything because nothing compares to him. At Advent and Christmas, we widen our gaze to see our lives set in God's big picture, drawn to marvel and worship. Oh, come, let us adore him, Christ the Lord.